Okay, just hold on one sec. Sorry. My child is rolling around her bed. Her new thing is getting up out of the bed in the middle of the night and getting herself a book.
Oh, that's so cute.
No, Megan, it's not cute because then she falls asleep on the book and then wakes up about an hour later and is like, because she's like, and then she has like the big line.
Oh, bless her little soul.
No, Megan, we won't bless her soul because she can be an asshole sometimes.
He redacting her christening.
Protected.
Snatch the Catholic right out of her.
Hi, and welcome back to Give Us Morg. I'm Neve.
I'm Megan.
And today I'm probably going to be more shy because Carl is sitting watching us record.
No, I'm so glad he can't hear me.
Oh, you wait until we record to get up.
Oh, no. He's like, okay, fine. I'm out of here.
He's literally giving me death. Oh, there's the finger.
Oh.
That's fine.
Okay, first of all, how do I mute Discord? It's the most annoying app in the world.
Is it going wild?
Yes, just like, oh my god, man, shut up.
Megan cannot handle extreme notifications.
No.
See Twitter. Megan cannot hack Twitter because it's just nonstop. And she gets like, I remember one time we were recording and Twitter was going off. Whatever, I can't even remember like if it was a tweet or a group chat or whatever it was. Twitter was just going off. And like, my phone, because obviously we've the same, like, the Give Us Morg account on my phone and Megan's phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was just, like, my phone was in silent. I was just leaving it be, you know, like, yeah, it was going off or whatever. Megan was like, what the fuck? Like, mid-recording was just like,
it stresses me out. It stresses me.
I was like, oh my god. Oh my god.
I actually have my phone on Do Not Disturb at all times these days.
Oh, literally, Megan is like, oh, sorry. Didn't see it. So, phone's on Do Not Disturb.
Always. 24/7. I started turning it on at night, and like, you can allow certain contacts, like, so I have mom, dad, if something was to happen, you know?
Yeah, in case there's like an emergency or something.
Exactly. But then it started to bleed into the day and I don't hate it.
You're like, I'm not mad.
I'm not mad at all about it. So I thought I would come on here and share my embarrassing story for today.
Can I just say, I cannot wait to see this.
Okay. So I was part of a Zoom class with Crime Lab. So
Shout out
Crime Lab. I absolutely love them. Steve Gaskin is the main guy on it. He used to be a DCI, I'm not 100% sure what that is, at Scotland Yard. And he now lectures in, I think, forensic psychology. So he's super smart and I just really respect him. So I joined this class and, you know, you want to turn your camera on, but you also, before you turn your camera on, you just want to see what you look like. You just want to get a notion.
You're making sure that, like, you know, there is nothing in your teeth or your hair doesn't look completely wild. You don't have mascara halfway down your face.
Exactly. And this is my favorite thing about Teams on the laptop. You can do a little preview before you actually turn your camera on. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
So I quickly Googled, like, how to do a preview on Zoom. And on my laptop, I have to press the function key and F6, I think, to turn my camera on, to actually enable it so that it will show a preview or whatever. So I press that and then I was looking at the preview and I check myself out, my hair. God, I'm gorgeous and smiling at myself, you know, because you'd be laughing. You want to see what you look like when you're laughing.
You were laughing. Oh, girl.
No, but like at the end, you know, if there's like any funny things, you're like, oh.
And you're like, oh.
And so then I close the little preview and I go you know, open back up the class window, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna turn my camera on, I'm looking fine. And the fucking camera was on the whole time.
Everyone saw her do her preview.
The whole fucking time. So I'm like checking my teeth, smiling at myself, looking at myself all different angles, checking my hair, fixing it. And this guy is talking about killer couples. And I'm here having a little lol by myself. No, it wasn't even a lol. I was just checking myself out. It's like, wow, you look hot. You've no makeup on. Wow, go you. This lighting is really doing it for you.
You were having a moment. While this guy is like killer couples.
And I shared it killer with everybody in couples. There.
Yep. They were all a part of your moment.
And you know what is worse? Is that nobody said anything.
They just let you continue on.
They just like let me do you. It.
They were watching you being like, is this one okay?
And then when I came back on the glass and I see myself, I'd done the full, you know, the comical thing of like, oh, and I put my hand over him, oh no, and I turned my camera off and I was like, oh my God, that made it worse.
And to the cherry on top of all of this is that it's recorded.
And
Megan's gonna receive like a copy of the recording tomorrow, and I have already told her she has to send it to you. Have to send it to me because I need to see.
Oh God, I'm so embarrassed, so embarrassed. But 10 out of 10, would recommend that class. It was really good.
Yes, love a good class. I wasn't on it, everybody.
We'll get you on the next one, I promise.
I will get to do one eventually. Megan has invited me to do like, what, 2 classes now, and they're on a day that I'm working it, like an evening shift, so I'm like, I can't. And then Megan sent me another one today, and I was like, sent me another one, I was like, I can't.
Yeah, that one's gonna be cool. That's like the Christmas that sounds quiz.
Super fun. I'm actually like really upset that I can't do it. I wonder if I could like just, you know, do it on my phone.
Well, do you know what he said? He said he's going to send the quiz to us afterwards, like the slides, so we can do it.
Oh, fun. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll do that then. Oh, my God. We should wait until you get home.
Oh, my God.
And then you come over and we drink wine. Like, when you sent it to me, I was like, God, I feel like I'd do really bad at that. And I'd be, like, really embarrassed then because we're a true crime podcast. It's
literally our part-time job. That's kind of
it's like job. It's our part-time full-time job,
don't you know? Oh my god Okay,
so enough rambling on, you guys. Last week I told Megan about BTK. We had a good old lol at Dennis.
Miss Lynn
We had a good old lol at Miss Lynn. It was great. If you haven't listened to it, go check it out if that's your thing. As I did say, I said it at the start of the episode, but it is a bit of a rougher case just on some of the aspects of it. So obviously, you know. So I was researching, probably going to give, I'm researching Charles Manson at the moment. Yeah. Don't know when I'm going to be doing him, but researching him. And I went to watch 60 Minutes Australia because they like covered it, and they called the Sharon Tate murders, they were like, Hollywood's most iconic murders.
Ooh. And I can imagine how they said it too.
Oh yeah, like it, and with the music in the background. Can we just not refer to murders as iconic?
I mean, that's kind of the bare minimum. Like, that's a really big letdown for a TV program.
I literally said it to Megan. I was like, this, it made me not want to finish it because I was just like, ew, you're gonna, no, like, it's not iconic. Okay. It's not iconic. Somebody died. That's an understatement. Several people died.
That's the thing with that murder, I feel, with those murders, that they do get so, it's almost a myth at this stage. People kind of forget that it actually happened.
I feel like people forget that there was more murders.
Yeah.
And I get, like, she was a super big Hollywood star at the time. And she was, you know, married to this really famous director, producer at the time. You know, like, I get it in the sense of, like, oh my God, it was like Kobe Bryant.
Yeah,
you know, there was other people on the plane, but it's almost overshadowed. But like, there was like 10 more people that were murdered.
Yeah. And yeah, let's spare a moment for those. All right. Like, I don't know. There was that movie with Hilary Duff in it that talked that was.
Oh, I never watched that because, yeah, I didn't watch it because I heard terrible things.
Zero out of 10. It's so bad. It like kind of makes it out to be, oh, if she just fought harder, like she could have saved herself. And I remember when we first joined Instagram, when we first started the podcast, there was another Instagram account that was like doing movie reviews and they were like, zero out of 10, this movie sucks, like it's so bad. And I commented on it and I was like, yes, it's awful, like it's terrible, should have never been made because it shouldn't have. And then like the producer or whatever the movie liked my comment and then DM'd,
got real salty.
Yeah, he DM'd your one and was going absolutely mad. It was absolutely hilarious. And all she did, or he did, was, you like, know, make that meme, like the Regina George one. So you agree, your movie is terrible.
It was great. He got bullied by like...
He got bullied by Instagram accounts with like less than 200 followers. It was amazing.
Oh, that's iconic. That's iconic.
Yes. This case is so about jealousy and greed and just, it's like Mean Girls
on crack
amplified. Yes, it's Mean Girls on crack. This case is about Michelle Missy Avila. So I'm just going to start. Michelle Avila was born on the 8th of February, 1968. At the time, when she was growing up, she really just preferred to be called Missy. So that's what I'm going to be calling her by throughout this whole episode.
Yeah.
She grew up with her parents, Irene and Ernie, and her three brothers, Ernie Jr., Mark and Chris, in the town of Arleta, California. Missy was always known to be very, very social and was always the center of attention. So,
oh, no, I don't like those people.
Girl! No, but in this case, Missy was very, like, just naturally.
Okay, okay. Like, she didn't seek out the limelight. She kind of just...
No, not at all. Okay, so, when Missy wasn't, like...
I redact my previous statement.
Redacted! When Missy was really young and she was in school, her teacher actually pulled Irene, the mother, aside and was like, I actually need you to have a talk with Missy to kind of not be so chatty. And maybe not be so nice to the other students because they're literally not focusing on their work. They're all so enamored with her.
Oh my God. Like, your daughter is too nice. It's distracting the other students.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And I kind of, you know, if my daughter was like that, I wouldn't exactly be mad about it.
No, I'd be like, damn, go my daughter for being, go Anna for being so nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a chance is that going to happen. Like, she's definitely going to be a like sarcastic little biatch.
If she's like anything like you, yeah. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, obviously.
No, no, it's fine. I can't help my face. It just makes it known that I don't like something.
Yeah. Well, you know what's really annoying is I have resting bitch face even when I'm happy.
I don't have I don't have resting bitch face, but my face, like, if I don't like something, my face will tell you. Like, I could be going, no, it's fine, but my face is like, bitch, it ain't fine.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you on that statement.
Yeah, it just does it, and like, I can't help it, and it tells all my secrets, because you know when you're trying not to hurt somebody's feelings, like, yes. Was it the time you made me that chili?
I was only thinking about this yesterday.
And I was like trying not to hurt your feelings, but my face just is like, no. And so Megan made me chili one time, and I'm not a lover of spicy food. I don't know if we've told this story on the podcast before or not. I'm not a lover of like spicy food. Megan is a lover of super spicy food. And I called over one day just for like chats or whatever. And it was like pre-pan- pandemic times.
Oh, it was like 5 years ago, no?
Oh, yeah, it was a good while ago.
It was in my first house.
Was it in your first house?
Oh, well, I used to make chili constantly, so it couldn't have been any time.
But so Megan was cooking chili and she's like, do you want some? And I was like, okay, sure, go on. And, you know, I think it started off with the no, it's fine. The real typical Irish, like, no, it's fine. And then you were like, no, have some. And I was like, okay. And then I took like one bite of this massive portion of chili. I was like, my face was like,
what happened? What happened after that? I can't remember.
I think you were like, oh, you didn't like it. And I was like, no, I did. I just don't love super spicy food. Like, you and Niall were like horsing it into you.
Oh, yeah. It's freaking chili, bro.
You and Niall were just like, and I was like, the rice.
Rice. And I'm so bad at cooking rice too. It's like, oh, you poor thing. You poor, poor thing.
Crunchy. I
know. Crunchy. Oh, yeah.
Oh, good times.
But yeah.
Anyway, back to Missy.
By the time Missy was 8, Karen Severson had moved into a place about 6 houses down from the Avila family. Okay. Karen started in the same class as Missy and she was bullied from the very beginning. Karen was always a bit overweight and I think she was a little bit shy at the beginning.
Never a good combination. Combination.
It ain't much, but it's honest work.
Combination.
Missy took Karen under her wing and they became very close very quickly. Karen was only 4 months older than Missy, so they related on a lot of things, and they became just like sisters.
Oh, cute. I feel like it's not going to end cute, but
for now, let's just accept the niceness for what it is now. In 1981, when Missy started high school at Bird Junior High in California, Karen started to realize just how jealous she actually was of Missy, because Missy was really popular, super nice, like everybody liked her, especially the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that feeling. Yeah, so Karen's already really jealous of Missy, and it just gets worse and worse as time goes on. It came to a point where she didn't even want other girls to be friends with Missy, because...
Okay, well, like, that's not healthy.
No, not at all. And Missy would, you know, hang around with different groups and stuff like that.
She was a social butterfly.
And so one day, Karen approached a group of girls that Missy sometimes hung around with and said, quote, you guys must really get around. I can't believe you all slept with the same guy at that party last week. Aren't you worried about diseases? And when they started on her and got in her face, she was like, oh, Missy told me. Missy told me that you done that.
First of all. Best friend confidentiality.
Secondly, never happened.
You just making up straight up lies here?
Yeah.
And then being like, my friend told me. You're a bitch, Karen.
And so the next day, the girls left a really mean note in Missy's locker and they wouldn't talk to her. And obviously, you know, because she's so upset about it and she has no other friends now, Karen is there to comfort her and remind her being that she's like, there for her.
I was just going to say, probably being like, I did not tell them. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's so weird.
What? But now we can just spend all of our time together forever and ever and ever.
Until I get pregnant. Because finally, Karen Severson started to get some male attention. And soon enough, she became pregnant at the age of 15. She did decide to keep the child and raise it.
Okay.
And Missy did everything she could to help and be a supportive friend. Irene said that Missy like changed overnight from talking about like boys mostly and school and whatever else to talking with Karen about nappies and her diapers and bottle feeds and all of that kind of a thing. Like, she really tried.
That's a friend, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's different. Like, obviously, like, you and my other friends, like, you didn't have to go from, like, talking about one thing to being like, oh, yeah, nappies. Because, like, you know, I was 25. Big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In age. 15, you're, like,
yeah,
very young. You know? It's 100%. A very mature thing to do for a 15-year-old.
Yeah. Well, I think Missy was only 14 at the time. Well, she would have turned 15.
Oh, yeah, because they were, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, when Karen dropped out of school during her fifth month, Missy felt incredibly alone. So she started hanging out with another girl called Laura Doyle. Laura Doyle had actually grown up in the same neighborhood as Karen and Missy, but they'd never been close. Like, they were in the same grade and the same age and everything, but they weren't like close up until now.
Okay, yeah. It can happen, you know.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's fine.
Different interests and stuff like that.
But Karen was still very jealous. She once walked into Missy's house and found Missy with her closest guy friend at the time and screamed at her something like along the lines of, if you were such a good friend, why don't you leave him and come help me with this baby? And ended it with, sometimes I think I hate you.
Well, first of all, Karen, where is the baby's dad? Second of all, Karen, Missy didn't give birth.
It's not like Missy's out partying. She was literally at home listening to vinyls or whatever with her friend.
Whatever they did back then in the 80s.
Yeah, tapes. Oh, it was tapes, I think. Wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it would have been some vinyls too. Vinyls and tape. Did you know I'm older than Google?
Oh my God. It was Google's, what birthday was it the other day?
25th birthday, I think.
Pain.
I'm older than Google. Love. And that sits very uneasy with me.
I would take that as a badge of honor. You got through like your first year of life without
Google. My first like 3 years of life.
Yeah. How did you learn how to walk? How did you learn how to talk?
Who the fuck knows, you know?
How did you learn to read?
It wasn't Paul and Linda.
Anyway, Karen's a bitch. Karen's a total bitch. Obsessive.
Like, I know I've told you, like, don't make new friends in Malta. But obviously, like, I want you to make friends in Malta. Like, it's just something you say.
Yeah.
You know, like, joking. Like, I'm hardly going to be like, yeah, bitch, you made a new friend.
How dare you?
I thought I was your best friend.
Eventually, Karen went back to school. At this point, Missy was in Polytechnic High School, and Karen decided to enroll in their Mission High School, which is basically for kids that need to learn at their own pace. So, you know when you see in American movies and the like, this is the school for bad kids?
Oh, that's what that is. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she left school 5 months pregnant and then she returned like after she had the baby.
Yeah. So they were in a different high. So this was junior high.
Yeah. So then when she returned, Missy had gone off to a different school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so then Karen was like, I'm going to follow her.
Karen went to the like joining mission school. And then Missy actually was like, Missy followed her.
Oh, Missy, no. Because like,
no.
You're so smart and you can so do that school.
Yeah, this is the thing. When she was in like younger school, I don't know what that's called in America, but she was actually put in a class for gifted children. Like, she is very, very smart. But she kind of started to go down this path of hanging with the wrong crowd and drinking and drugs and, you know.
Popular girl shit,
exactly. That same year, Irene dropped the news on the children that she and Ernie were getting a divorce. And this hit Missy particularly hard.
Oh.
Yeah, poor thing. Her grades had been dropping anyway due to Karen's absence, and this pushed her to the point where she decided to enroll in the mission program too. Okay, that's what I just said. Anyway. This became the start of Missy's rebellion era. She changed the way she dressed.
Not a phase.
It's not a phase, Mom. Her attitudes towards school and just daily life in general completely changed. She was just uninterested, and herself and Irene fought constantly. And then one day, Missy left her notebook covered in the usual like school scribbles open on the kitchen counter. And Irene had a look through it. And she found a poem that Missy had written that read, quote, "Missy, energetic, small, young, impatient, friend of Karen, lover of happiness, mother, and music, who feels lonely, desperate, and hurt, who needs love, comfort, and caring, who gives friendship, advice, and second chances, who fears big roller coasters, windy days, and the ocean." I just thought that was a really sweet poem.
It, like, I think that really shows, I think first of all, that shows deep down, like, she's in this school and she's going through her rebellion phase, but deep down, she's this mature young woman.
Definitely.
Who's just hurting.
Definitely. And you're, like, young, your parents are getting divorced, your friends are bringing drama, you're getting beat up at school, like...
Yeah, and, like, when you're 15, 16, like, you feel everything so...
intense.
More intense. Yeah. Like, everything is, like, everything is the end of the world.
Yeah. I don't know, like, who I thought I was at 16, but I related to, like, sad, depressing songs way more back then than I did now. And growing up, you obviously have, you know, a little bit more to be a bit pressed about. But I don't know. I don't know what happens when you kind of reach a certain age. You just kind of...
I think just as you, yeah, as you get older, you learn to deal with it better. And then also the smaller things don't bother you as much as they once did. So you kind of learn to just, as they say, water off a duck's back, do you know?
Yeah.
Like, you kind of just are like, yeah, okay, whatever. Get over that.
Mm-hmm.
Except me, who cries at literally everything.
I've cried... only once in the last week, I think.
Megan's not a crier. I'm sometimes ashamed to say I cry at, like, everything. I cried watching Adele help that man propose to his girlfriend.
I didn't see it. But that wouldn't make me cry. I'm like, eh.
No, yeah, whatever. No, that made me cry. Like, do I know these people? Absolutely fucking not. Was it beautiful? God damn right it was. Should I have cried? No, not really. Did I cry? Far too hard. And then Carl is an emotionalist person. So it's like, you know, two peas in a pod.
Yeah. As it should be.
I make up his emotions.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe that's it. You're carrying his emotional loads.
No.
Oh. That sounds better when it's written.
It sounded way prettier in your head.
Yeah, it did. Okay, so I'm just going to change that. Redacted! I'm going to change that to, you carry his emotional burden.
There you go. I mean, I make that sound like he's an he's not a horrible person, you guys. Don't worry. He's making me say it. No, he's not.
I said he was in the room.
It's fine, he left. He knows better. Sorry. Yeah, so as we were saying, at like 15 and 16, like, you feel everything, just hardcore.
You get real, real in your feelings. Oh, and that night, Missy came home high after smoking weed, which Irene noticed right away. And Missy was half honest with her, and she did admit to it. And she told her that she was only just trying it for the first time, when in reality, she had actually been experimenting with drugs for a while.
Okay.
Even with coke and stuff, like, kind of more Missy, dangerous too young. Side of drugs. Yeah.
Like, I'm not one for drugs anyway, but, like, I think, you're especially too young for... Do you know what? Like, let's be honest. Like, 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds are right there smoking weed nonstop. You know, it's cultural almost at this point, but... Like, for the other, for, like, LSD and cocaine and...
One day, Karen decided that she wanted to make other girls not only dislike Missy, but actually hate her.
Why, Karen?
She told a girl at school that Missy had been sleeping with her boyfriend. The next day, this girl and three others jumped on Missy and attacked her and told her that she had Karen to thank for it, and Missy didn't believe them. During junior year, Missy was 16 when she met Victor Amaya. He was enamored with her from day one. They got very close, but never became anything official, although they would sleep together the odd time. And of course, Karen continued to grow more and more jealous.
First of all, Karen, you're right here having babies. Okay, why can't your friend also get it on if she wants to?
Yeah, exactly. Karen, though, eventually got what she wanted in a boy named Randy Fernandez. Randy Fernandez had been really good friends with Missy before and had been a great support to her when Karen was on her maternity leave, I suppose is what you could call it.
Yeah, okay.
He's actually the one that was in the house that day when Karen stormed in and like verbally assaulted Missy. When Karen was with Randy, the girls started to see less of each other, and so Missy started to spend more time with Laura Doyle.
Yeah.
So Laura and Missy, they'd go off to Stonehurst Park together and drink and smoke all day. And then Laura actually ended up getting with Victor Amaya. But this didn't bother Missy because she'd actually been seeing an Irish boy from school named Bobby Miller.
Oh, hello, Bobby.
How are you?
Them Americans, they love us over, don't they?
It's the accent, I tell you. One day, Karen had invited Missy to her apartment that she shared with her boyfriend, Randy, and her child. Karen and Missy, like I was just saying, they hadn't seen a lot of each other in recent kind of times.
Yeah, they were kind of busy doing their... Karen had finally found a fella and was kind of, you know, was like, I'm in love. So fuck you, Missy. I don't need you anymore.
Yeah. And at one point when Missy was in the apartment, apparently she bent down to pick up the child. Now, there's two different versions of this story. I'm going to tell the one that I read in a published book. At one point, Missy stood up and bent down to pick up the kid. And Randy came up behind her, pulled her into his lap and told her that he was still crazy about her. And at that very moment, Karen walked back in. And she screamed at them both and kicked them both out of the apartment. Now, the other version of this is that Randy did pull Missy onto his lap, but Karen didn't walk in, but Missy instead actually told her about it.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Either way, it happened.
Either way, yeah.
About a week later, they kind of became friends again. Karen called up and apologized for screaming at Missy, and Missy apologized for whatever had happened, that she didn't mean for it, like he did it to her kind of a thing.
Yeah, like she was like, it wasn't me trying to get with him, it was him, you know, flirting with me, and it just, like, you walked in kind of just at the wrong time.
Well, probably the right time. They became friends again, and all was well between Karen and Missy for now. When school came back in September, Missy noticed her friend Laura's absence. It turns out that Laura and her boyfriend Victor had actually broken up. So Missy went to Victor's house to see if he was okay, because remember, they are super close.
Yeah.
They stood talking for a while, like outside, and Victor confided in her why he'd actually broken up with Laura, because Laura was convinced that he was in love with Missy. Missy started crying and was obviously really upset that her friend would think that her boyfriend was still in love. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. It's ugly. Yeah, like she was kind of like, oh my God, like I hope she doesn't hate me or anything for it.
Yeah, and she's literally standing there crying, and apparently he leaned in and kissed her. And at that moment, again, unfortunately, Laura Doyle pulled up in her car and spotted them.
Oh, Missy, yeah. No.
Missy, so it looked like, good luck. Yeah.
No, Missy does not have good luck. So, like, she pulled up and it looked like her suspicions were true then.
Yeah. Now, this is what I read in the book. It is a book that Irene, the mother, was involved with, and some of the brothers. So Victor just approached Laura in the car and he tried to explain things to her. And she took a minute. Laura took a minute and thought for a second. She was like, quote, I'm going to kill her for sure.
Oh, no, Laura. Lauren.
Laura.
Laura.
Same thing. At this point, though, Karen had found out that she was pregnant again with Randy's baby. Yeah.
Karen, so she decided, get it together. You're like 17. I'm sorry.
We said it about Marianne Cotton. Condoms exist.
Especially back then, the 80s. Yeah, condoms were fucking everywhere.
Karen thought I'm like, what? So Karen thought it would be a really good idea to go and visit Irene one day when Missy wasn't around.
Okay, that's weird. Why are you doing that, Karen?
She told Irene to tell Missy to stay away and informed her that she'd been sleeping around and that she should get checked for diseases. And can I just ask, what is this girl's obsession with fucking diseases? Girl, you're not even wearing a condom yourself, all right?
First of all, it's a step too far, especially at like 16, 17, to bring parents into it.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, your daughter is sleeping around. Your daughter should get checked.
You get checked. Shut up your face. Shut up at your face. And apparently Irene just turned to Karen and was like, look, if you're not going to talk right, you can get out of my house. So go, Irene. And she never mentioned it. Yeah, Irene never mentioned it to Missy and neither did Karen. So Missy just kind of never knew that this happened.
Oh, okay.
Karen continued to act like everything was okay. Like they were just still best friends. Like nothing was wrong. And Missy was so happy because she was like, they had even carved in trees, like Karen and Missy for life. And like one of the lines in her poem was friend of Karen, you know?
Yeah, like she was a loyal friend.
Yeah. And while it may not have looked like it objectively, I think they had a bond and they fought like sisters. In Missy's eyes. Obviously, Karen's eyes were a lot
different.
Different.
A lot more green tinted.
Oh my God, that's such a good analogy.
Thank you.
And right here is where we're going to take our ad break. All right, welcome back from the ad break. On October 2nd, 1985, Missy came bouncing in from school. And she was in absolutely top form. She was so happy. She told Irene that she was going to go out with her friends for a drive. She hopped in the shower and at about 3:30 p.m., Laura Doyle walked into the house and shouted for Missy. Missy told her mom that she'd be home by 6, but if she was going to be any later, she'd call and let her know. So off they went, but just before Missy left, she turned to Irene and told her she loved her. At this point, like, Missy and Irene's relationship was so good. Missy was actually confiding a lot in her mom, like about her first sexual experience and boys.
She was kind of opening up to her mom and, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of the rebellious stage is kind of almost coming to an end.
Yeah, exactly. Like she's making peace with the parents' divorce and I guess she's saying, so my friends are around and, you know, everything is fine.
Everything's going good.
At 6 p.m. that night, Laura Doyle called the house and asked for Missy. Irene was a little bit shocked because Missy still obviously wasn't home and she was supposed to be with Laura. But Laura explained that she didn't know where Missy was and that the last time she'd seen her was when she left her behind at Branford Park talking to three guys in a Camaro. Laura said that she needed to leave to go and get gas, but Missy wanted to stay with the boys.
I smell a cover story.
Oh, a big one, a big nasty one. Irene waited up all night for Missy. Her mind thinking of all the different places she could be. Probably asleep somewhere, had partied too hard. Like she literally, Irene slept on the couch with the door open. Like the front door wide open, waiting for Missy to come home.
She was like, yeah, rob me, just as long as my daughter gets home safe.
Yeah. The next morning, when Missy still wasn't home, Irene really began to worry. She started to call up a few of Missy's friends, but nobody had actually seen her. Christy, who was Missy's oldest friend, so we're talking like super like young.
Pre-K.
Yeah. The thing was, Christy had actually moved states for a school, I believe. So she didn't get to see a lot of Missy, but at this time she was actually at home. She only lived a couple like doors down the street. So Irene went down to her and the pair went off together to different people's houses looking and searching for Missy, but they found nothing. At 3 p.m. that day, Irene reported Missy is missing. Apparently the first officer was less than helpful, asking if they had maybe had a fight that she like ran away and does she have a boyfriend that she's with and da, 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 da.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. When a family member or a super close friend is reporting somebody missing, police need to listen. You know, like I know my daughter. I know that like, even if we did have some sort of fight, she'd come home, like, you know, like, listen to them. They know that person. They know the person who's missing and they know the type of person that they are, and they know, like, okay, yeah, they might go missing for a little while, but not this long, or, you know.
And she's not, like, with any friends, like, we've checked.
Yeah. So, like, I just, it boils my blood because, you know, I feel like so many people would be found a lot quicker and more than likely less harmed if police just took the reports at face value.
Yeah, like, what harm is it going to do? Oh, you wasted some of our time. Okay, we're paying for you, so deal with it. Yeah. Like, what?
We fucking pay your wages.
Yeah. But eventually he did give Irene a form to fill out anyway for the report.
Yeah.
Karen Severson volunteered to go driving with Irene to look for the three men in a Camaro.
How helpful.
Yeah, and Irene, like, she used to pull people over. Like, she used to get people to pull over, and she'd get all of the men to come out of the car so she could look in the car, and she would, like, do a little mini interview with them. Like, she was,
like, hell-bent. I'm gonna find my daughter, like.
Mm-hmm. So later that month, or actually only 2 days later, on October 4th, two hikers were walking through Big Tahunga Canyon in Angeles National Forest when they came across Missy's body, face down in the stream/creek, with a 100-pound log on top of her body.
Oh my God.
Missy was only 5'2" and only weighed at about 97 pounds at the time she went missing.
For fuck's sake.
The log was literally bigger than her animals. So Missy's family were informed, and in the aftermath, Karen Severson and Laura Doyle had no shame in getting close to the family, particularly Irene. Laura Doyle sent a condolences card after the funeral with $20 inside of it.
Go shove that $20 up your fucking arsehole.
Who is sending money in a condolences card? Is that a thing?
I didn't think so. I thought, like, you just sent the condolence card.
Yeah, well, the detectives on this case thought it was really weird as well. But,
okay.
The Avila family claimed that Karen basically moved into the house with her two-year-old, although Karen denies this. She also promised that she would do...
No, I didn't.
No way.
What? Me?
Get this. She also promised that she would do whatever she could to try and find the, quote, animal that murdered Missy. And then Karen started...
Oh, look, I found her. She's in the mirror.
I haven't even told you what happened yet, and you're, well, I mean, the way we've talked, you know what I mean.
I can work it out.
Karen started to drink really heavily, and can we just note that she was pregnant?
Not, yeah, I was just going to say, was she not, she was pregnant still?
She was.
And she was,
from,
like,
what I believe, yeah. And apparently she would sleep in Missy's room, use her things, and apparently even wear her clothes.
No, Karen, that's, first of all, you're like, well, maybe then she wasn't pregnant, because if Missy is like 5'2" and is like 97 pounds, I'm sorry, but those clothes ain't fitting a pregnant body.
No, well, the thing is that I think it could just be like handbags, the that kind of thing.
Yeah,
because Missy was super small and petite, and Karen was bullied all of the time because she was overweight. Yeah. And she was just a broader, bigger person, you know, which is
Can I just say, even if Karen wasn't responsible, which I know you haven't told me that she's responsible yet, but, you know, 1 + 1 = 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's, even if you weren't responsible, it's still a step too far to go and wear the person's clothes. Don't touch their belongings.
Don't sleep in their bed.
Don't sleep in their bed. Don't, like, you know, first of all, common courtesy. Second of all, Karen, you're a bitch.
I can say that because Karen,
literally, because I can say that because technically she is older than us. Just at the time, she's 17.
Karen would visit Missy's grave a lot and the area where Missy was found, and then Laura Doyle would come and visit often too. And she told Irene that she wanted to commit suicide because she felt so guilty that she was the last person to see Missy alive.
Why do you feel guilty, Lauren? Mm-hmm. Laura, why do you feel guilty? I keep calling you Lauren, but your name is Laura.
Police at the time had nothing. For all they knew, they were still looking for three men in a Camaro. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then 2 years later, Laura confessed something. She said that she had lied previously. She said that she hadn't actually left Missy at the park, that instead she had left Missy outside of a neighborhood church so that Missy could go in and pay off a $500 drug debt to a dealer. And that was the last time she saw her. And even that story, you're like, okay, so you let your friend walk into a church to go meet a drug dealer and then left?
First of all, is that a thing? Do people meet their drug dealers in churches?
I don't know. It's California. Weird shit goes on in there.
That's very true. California is a wild place.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Wild West, but not.
First of all, why are you changing your story?
Yeah, 2 years later.
I feel like if she hadn't changed her story, they probably would have got away with it because they would have just been looking for these three non-existent men, like.
Mm-hmm. And at one point, Karen had come forward and said, like, oh, maybe it was, like, one of the guys. I think she said it could have been Randy.
Why are you trying to implicate your baby daddy?
Yeah, right? I think because she at the time would have thought that Randy was, like, madly in love with Missy. He ended up getting beat up, like, really badly.
By, like, people who were like, you killed Missy.
Yeah.
And there's Karen and Laura just being like, oh, no. Here's $20.
A girl named Eva Chirambolo took a visit.
That is a name.
Yeah. I don't even know if I'm saying that correctly. I'm pretty sure I am. I did look up the pronunciation. But anyway, a girl named Eva Chirambolo took a visit, I don't know if that's correct grammar, to the police station on July 26, 1988. So that's, what, 2 years after the murder? 3 years after the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a confession to make. She recently lost her brother. Get this. She'd recently lost her brother and saw the pain that it caused her family. And it wasn't until then that she realized the damage the loss of a child or a family member can do.
Oh, it was, okay. It wasn't until you experienced loss yourself until you realized that that is a shitty thing to happen to somebody.
Yeah. It's
concerning, to be honest.
Right? Like, where's your just basic empathy?
Yeah.
She told the police everything she knew. She talked about how Laura picked Missy up that day and how Karen and herself followed behind in a separate car.
Okay.
They go to their location in Angeles National Forest and all of the girls walked, I think it was about 100 yards into the woods, and they were already arguing over boys. So Karen and Laura had decided that they were going to confront Missy.
About and Eva, their boyfriends, even though Laura had broken up with your man and nothing happened with Karen's boyfriend. But okay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, I don't know if Eva was part of this like hate group or whatever it was, or she was just there to be part of things. At one point, after about 100 yards, apparently Missy sat on a rock and was like, I'm not going any further. Let's just hash this out here. What's going on?
Yeah, she was like, let's just all out in the open. Let's get it sorted. Be friends again.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, these are my ride or dies.
I think most people in a situation like that where it's like pretty intense are just like, okay, let's just talk about it. Let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Karen and Laura started to beat up Missy, knocking her to the ground and screaming at her, accusing her of sleeping with her boyfriends. This is the point where Eva says that she went back to the car because she sensed something really bad was about to happen.
So instead of being like, girls, stop, you're going to kill her, she's like, I'm just going to wait in the car until y'all are done.
Mm-hmm. But remember we had that case before where like the troubled girl beat up another girl because of a boyfriend thing too. It really reminds me of that case. Yeah, Krista Pike. That's who it was. This case reminds me of Krista Pike.
Yeah, it does a little. And I understand maybe she didn't know that they had killed her until like she was reported missing or whatnot. But the fact that you sat on that information.
Yeah.
For 3 years. It's just, no.
Somehow, somebody had taken out a knife and they started to cut off Missy's hair. And Missy's hair was a really big part of who she was and it really added to her beauty. Like she had this like beautiful waist length brunette hair and it like framed her face perfectly. It was just gorgeous, gorgeous hair.
Yeah.
And so they just cut it with a knife and they just left lumps of it lying around the area. Then They dragged her towards the creek and held her head under about 8 inches of water until she stopped moving. Then the two girls picked up the 100-pound log and put it on top of her. And I did read in one, well, more than one source that she probably wasn't fully, like, passed.
She was probably dead. Just passed out. Like, she was just unconscious. She probably wouldn't have been, like, actually
dead. That's the log. Yeah.
That's horrific. That's a horrific death.
And she's so tiny. So when the hikers found her body, they actually thought that she was a child, like 10.
God.
The next day after Eva went to the police, Karen Severson and Laura Doyle were arrested and both were charged with first degree murder. But they were convicted on second degree murder in March of 1990 because the jury couldn't prove beyond a doubt that the murder was, like, premeditated. Even though they took her there with the notion that they were going to beat her up.
Yeah, they obviously took her there with the notion that they were going to harm her anyway.
Yeah, they brought a knife.
Like, you bring a knife for one thing and one thing only. To, like, attack someone so badly that they either end up in hospital or you're killing them.
I just think the hair thing, like, the hair thing really stuck with me. Like, cutting off somebody's hair is so personal and it's so, I'm going to attack your beauty. Like what makes people like you in their eyes.
To me, that is Karen being like, I'm going to make you ugly.
Just like me.
Yeah.
They could have never made that girl ugly, though.
But that's just so sad to me. Like, you're supposed to be this girl's best friend. Like, she helps you look after your child.
Yeah. She's stuck up for you in fights. And
even when she was told you were to blame for the fight, she still was like, no, can't be Karen. You're just like, my boyfriend fancies you. How dare you? I'm sorry. Yeah. What? How's that my problem?
Can I just add that even if she had slept with their boyfriends, she still didn't deserve this.
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Karen Severson was released from prison on December 9th, 2011, after serving 23 and a half years. Laura Doyle, I know, right? Laura Doyle was released from prison in December 2012 after serving 22 years. And I don't really understand how Laura was in prison for less time than Karen.
Probably she just got out paroles and things like that.
Yeah, I don't get it. But anyway, Karen, the neck, the cheek, and the gall.
She did not go to Irene, did she?
No. She's gone on to promote some books that she's written on the case.
She's not allowed to make money off of it.
This is the thing. So I'll get into it. The first book was written under a pseudonym. Pseudonym, that's the one. And the second book, called My Life, I Lived It. They were both about the case and her life afterwards.
That's good for you, Karen, that you lived it. Missy did not.
Yeah. Dick, you fucking bitch. And she's still alive and kicking, so she might listen to this. And if you are, oh my God, just fuck you. She appeared on the Dr. Phil show. Oh, yeah. Oh. Sorry. Can I just say, the second book, the one where she wrote it under her own name, she released it on the eve of the anniversary of Missy's murder.
That is selfish. Like, that is it. That is disgusting.
She is a narcissist down to the ground. Like, that she is the most textbook.
But that is the most narcissistic thing.
Right?
Yeah.
She appeared on the Dr. Phil show to try and clear her name and make it seem like she was an advocate for an anti-bully charity. And she said that she was going to
Who let her be an advocate for an anti-bullying charity?
This is the thing. She's the bully. Not. Yeah, she's not.
She just maintained that she was, but she's not.
Yeah, because she said she was going to send some of the profits from the book to this anti-bullying charity.
But it was a front so that she could keep all of her profits.
Yeah, it was a front. So in one interview, like, the interviewer is like, so what are you going to do with the profits? Like, you're donating them? And she was like, yeah, yeah. And he was like, all of them? And he was like, no. She goes, no, like, I have to find a way to live. Like, I can't get a job. So.
Oh, how horrible. Do you know who also can't get a job? Missy, because you murdered her.
Mm-hmm. And on the Dr. Phil show and in other interviews, she continues to use victim-blaming language and seems to still blame Missy for everything.
How is it Missy's, like, how... Oh, yeah, it's for sure Missy's fault that you murdered her.
Listen to this quote. She said, quote, I was tired. I was frustrated. All this stuff, everything we were accusing her of. She knew she did it, but not one time did she say she's sorry. And in the Dr. Phil episode, she's like, I remember her looking at me like with just this kind of look in her eyes. Like, she didn't seem sorry. She kind of.
I'm so looking her up on Dr. Phil later.
Oh, she's a vile, vile human. And Dr. Phil, as much as I don't respect him, he did give her a good grill. So Missy's family have been amazing throughout this whole thing. Her sister-in-law, mm-hmm. Siobhan, has continuously and tirelessly advocated for the passing of Missy's Law, which would force publishing companies to contact the family of a victim should a book be written about their case by the perpetrator in the state of California.
Yes, queen.
Because when they found out about this book, it was actually by somebody that was just interested in the case. Like, they didn't know that Karen was writing
Karen
this book.
Karen was out here writing books.
Yeah. And then the publishing company actually changed the price of the book to zero to ensure that Karen would not see a penny in profits.
We love to see it.
So the son of Sam Law, in a clip that I seen with the family, it is like the son of Sam Law, I think, was different from what they wanted, or it had been thrown out, like one of those things. It didn't cover what they needed.
It didn't cover what,
So, yeah, they actually got that law passed. And, yeah, that is it. Like, I just feel so bad for Missy. Like, I feel she was such a promising young adult.
And do you know what? So what if she did get with their boyfriends? Like, first of all, can we all just say, why is everyone always mad at the mistress instead of the, you know, your partner?
Yeah.
Never made sense to me. But also... just like, you don't need to actually go and murder somebody over that. You could just not talk to them, or, you know, remove them from your life. Or there's so many options. But
so
murder,
many options.
Murder does not need to be one.
Absolutely not.
That has been the case of Michelle Missy Avila. Hope you really enjoyed it. If you did, let us know in the comments of the post on Instagram at giveusmorg. And for updates on new episodes and other nonsense, you can also follow us on Twitter at giveusmorg. And if you want to see who you're listening to, you can follow our own personal accounts, which is at megpowell_ and at mrs_neve. And we're doing so well with the website right now. There has never been so many posts on the website, where we basically just post like a blog version of the episodes. And then there's also just a few other kind of little blogs in there as well, of like different things that we've done that have to do with true crime and stuff. And you can find that at www.giveusmorg.com.
Yes, you can. You can sign up to our newsletter. Sorry to interrupt. You can sign up to our newsletter so that you get a little notification in your inbox when we upload something. Yeah.
Yes. And you can, if you wanted to subscribe to us on whatever app that you are listening to us on, we would really appreciate that. And if you leave us a review, we will always give you a shout out. And I want to give a shout out. I don't know if you want your name out there on the internet, so I won't say your name, but me and Megan last week received a donation on the website.
Yes, it was the best day ever.
It literally made me and Megan's day. I don't know if you want your name out on the internet, so I won't, just in case. Mm-hmm. But you know who you are, and thank you so, so much. That was just the most thoughtless thing.
Thoughtless?
Thoughtless. That's the wrong word. That's the most thoughtful thing. I am so sorry. It's late at night and I'm tired, okay? That is the most thoughtful thing that someone has done for us, and we really appreciate it, and we really appreciate you and all of you.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
We love every single one of you. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of your week.
Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next week for whatever case I have for you that probably won't be Charles Manson, just FYI.
But stay tuned.
Stay tuned. He is coming.
No.
Helter Skelter.
All right. Love and peace.
Bye. There's a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah, there it is.
We're just too lazy to find it.
Way too lazy. Listen, I when I know I'm recording later, I try not to use up all of my comedic genius at work, but sometimes, you know,
it happens.
It just has to be done. Yeah. Alright.
Sometimes I come out with something absolutely hilarious and I'm like, oh, that's me fucked for the podcast. There
goes all my comedy points.
Oh, used all my comedy. Have none left for the day.
Oh my god, is that what happens to Niall?
He just only has like 5 comedic points left in his body. And so then when it comes time for the podcast, he's just like spitting out these really terrible jokes instead of building it to make one really giant great joke.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
I think that's what it is. It's not at all that he finds shit jokes funny.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I forgot. Sorry.
What?
I found M&M's.
Sorry, you're frozen on me right now, so I can't even see, but where were they?
They were like, I brought them in earlier on, and there's like a blanket underneath me. Oh no.
Are they melted?
They could very well be, because I've been sitting on them. Oh no, they're not. Ready for the ASMR?
Was that AS?
So that's
it. Oh my god. Discord. I turned the notifications off.
Discord, don't play by your rules.
It's actually terrorizing me, the little blue robot.
Terrorizing you.
Oh my god, I just did it again.
Oh, no. I heard it that time.
Yeah, see?
So that wasn't ASMR enjoyable for you?
I mean, I have that thing where chewing makes me want to kill people, so.
Yeah, okay. So you're telling me I shouldn't go start an ASMR YouTube?
I mean, you're so good. You have the microphone for it.
I actually really do, don't I? Yeah,
you're so good.
Sorry, we're getting very distracted today. Apologies, yeah. It's the M&Ms. I forgot they were there. You know, happens to the best of us.
You were gonna eat them without me, weren't you?
Knowing better than eating all that shit food while watching 1,000-pound Sisters.
Oh, you see that my 600-pound life. Doctor now.
Chef's
kiss. I'd die for that man. Simply, I would just die for him.
I would gain 600 pounds just so I could go see him.
Go see Mole Man. That's what he fully reminds me of, Mole Man from The Simpsons.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Like a more hardcore one. I bet you Dr. Now listens to like black metal, like death metal.
He like gets in his car after a long day of... gets into his car and is just like, ooh, wah!
And he's so small, you can only see the top of his head through the window. So he's just like,
so all you see is
class.